Thank you to the organizers for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here. So, this talk is about a certain epistemic norm, which I'm going to call plan conditionalization. So plan conditionalization says this. Suppose an agent is certain that she will receive some evidence at some point in the future without losing any evidence. Then she is required by epistemic rationality to plan to update her credences, her degrees of belief, by conditionalization. So what is updating by conditionalization? Suppose there are two times, and the strongest evidence that the agent gets between those two times is E. Now suppose the agent's credence function before, at the first time, is P old, and her credence function at the second time is P new, then for any proposition, H, her credence, her new credence in that proposition is her conditional credence in that proposition given her the evidence that she has gained. So basically the idea is that posterior credences are just conditional credences on the strongest evidence that the agent takes. Now, some people have defended plan conditionalization by appealing to a certain kind of argument called the diachronic Dutch book argument. So a Dutch book is a system of bets which when accepted result involve pose a risk of monetary loss without any possibility of monetary gain. A diachronic Dutch book is a system of bets which are offered at multiple points of time, and which when accepted pose a risk of monetary loss without any possibility of monetary gain. This will be made slightly more precise soon. Now the idea behind the diachronic Dutch book for plan conditionalization is that if an agent does not plan to update her credences by conditionalization, then she will be vulnerable to a diachronic Dutch book by her own lights. So she will be exploitable in terms of money. So why should we care about diachronic Dutch books for plan conditionalization? So to give you a sense of why I'm interested in this topic, I just want to locate these sorts of arguments within a broader project, a broader approach to epistemic normativity. So the idea is that some people think that epistemic norms can be justified or vindicated by appealing to norms of instrumental rationality. So they think that we have to fix a conception of value. It could be monetary value, it could be epistemic value, some other kind of practical value. And the idea is that we can show that the norms of epistemic rationality cohere with the instrumentally rational pursuit of that kind of value. So that's the thought. And diachronic Dutch books are an instance of this approach. So I am generally skeptical about this approach, but I'm not going to express my general reasons for being skeptical here. But I'm going to focus solely on diachronic Dutch book arguments and show that they run into trouble with a certain attractive conception of evidence. So this is the second, this is my claim on the matter. So the diachronic Dutch book argument for plan conditionalization is incompatible with an attractive conception of evidence, namely evidence externalism. So evidence externalism says that an agent's evidence may entail non-trivial propositions about the external world. So the argument is basically that if you're an evidence externalist, you should not be appealing to diachronic Dutch books to justify plan conditionalization. So in order to state the argument, I need some formal machinery. And the machinery that I'm going to introduce, it's pretty minimal. It has two components. One is frames, and the other one involves updating facts. So frames are structures that we use to represent the agent's current doxastic state and our future evidence. So it's this triple, this structure, WER, where the first Element W is a set of doxastically possible words, the set of words that the agent assigns non-zero credence to. E is an evidence function. It maps each word, each doxastically possible word, to a proposition. And that proposition represents the strongest future evidence that the agent is going to gain in that word at some time. And finally, pi is a regular probability function that represents the agent's prior credences. It represents the agent's current credences before gathering the new evidence. And it's a regular probability function in the sense that it assigns non-zero credence to every doxastically possible word, but we have already defined doxastically possible words as words that the agent assigns non-zero credence to, so that's fine. So to take an example, let's think about this example, so the wall, no deception. So it says that I'm about to enter a room where I'm sure I will face a wall. I'm also certain that the wall will be either red or white. No matter what happens, I will learn what the true color of the wall is. Right now, however, I'm only 50% confident that the wall is red. So we can represent this with the following frame, where there are two words in the space of doxastically possible words, R and W. R is the word where the wall is red, W is the wall where the wall is white. Now your evidence, because you're going to learn the true color of the wall, if your evidence in R is just the proposition that the wall is red, so it's the singleton set containing R, and your evidence in the world where the wall is white, it is W, the proposition that the wall is white. And because you're 50-50 beforehand, so pi assigns 0.5 to both R and W. So now, an updating plan is just a plan that tells you how to respond to your evidence, what credence function to adopt in response to your evidence. And you can model that as a function that takes each word to a credence function, provided that the function never outputs two different credence functions when you have the same evidence in two words. We can ignore that detail for now. That's not going to matter that much. So conditionalizing plans are a kind of updating plan. So conditionalizing plans tell you to update by conditionalization. So in the previous example, because you learn that the wall is red, when the wall is red, you become certain that the wall is red when the wall is red, and you assign credence zero to the proposition that the wall is white when the wall is red. So that's what it does. The conditionalizing plan will map the word R to a credence function BR, which does those two things. So now we are in a position, I'll come back to this later. Now we are in a position to say what a diatonic Dutch loop is. Sorry, this is the setup, takes some time. We'll get to the main argument very soon. A diachronic, we can start with by distinguishing two things, bets and books. A bet, as I'm going to define it, is just a gamble that pays some amount of money when a certain proposition is true and pays nothing otherwise. And the amount, I'm assuming, can be either negative, positive, or zero. So it does not literally pay, it could also involve that you will lose something. And this value, the money that it pays when the proposition is true, is the stake of the bet on that proposition. Now, a book is just a collection of bets on a set of propositions. Now, we need two notions. The first one is the notion of a payoff of a book. So, a payoff of a book is just the sum of the stakes of the bets on propositions that are true in a particular world. So, suppose we are talking about the word W, and we have a book. We just look at the propositions that are true in W, and then we sum up the stakes of the bets defined on those propositions. So we have a payoff of the book. The maximum price that an agent can pay for a bet is the expected payoff of the bet. So if the stake of a bet on a proposition is R, and the agent assigns credence C to that proposition, then it's the product of C and R. because the payoff is always, if the proposition is not true, the payoff is always zero, so it doesn't matter. Now the maximum price of a book, so this is where, this is a non-trivial principle actually. So the maximum price of a book, which is a collection of bets, is just the sum of the maximum prices of each of the bets. So some certain kinds of decision theorists would reject that idea. But for now, we are going to assume it. So the important notion is this, the notion of minimum profit. So the idea is that the minimum profit that an agent can rationally make from a book is just the payoff of the book minus the maximum price that the agent can rationally pay for that book. That's quite natural. So if the book is sold to the agent at maximum price, the minimum profit that the agent can make will have to be the difference between the payoff of the book and the price that the agent has already paid. So a diachronic Dutch book. So now we have the definition of a diachronic Dutch book. So suppose you're expecting to get a number of different pieces of evidence. So let E be the set of all the doxastically possible pieces of future evidence that an agent could gain. So a diachronic Dutch book for an updating plan R is a series of books, starting with G and then G1 to GK, such that the first book G is sold to the agent at maximum price before she gathers evidence. Then each GJ is sold to the agent as maximum price when her future evidence is EJ, one of the few evidence propositions in E. And as a result, the agent runs a risk of losing money without any possibility of gaining money. So the idea is that in all the words, so in any word where the agent's evidence is EJ or any EJ, the net minimum profit that the agent can make from G and GJ together is less than or equal to zero, and in some words, it's less than zero. So there's a risk of monetary loss. So that's our definition of diachronic Dutch book. So in some ways, it differs from the standard definition of diachronic Dutch book. So the difference actually lies in the second clause of the definition. So often when people talk about Dutch books, they say each GJ is sold to the agent at maximum price when EJ is true. In fact, as it will turn out, those two things are not the same, because like it will depend on certain conditions on your future evidence. We are going to stick with this definition of diachronic Dutch books. Okay. So the diachronic Dutch book for planned conditionalization. So this is not Lewis's diachronic Dutch book for planned conditionalization. This is a version of the argument inspired partly by Van Prost. So we need two assumptions for the diachronic Dutch book to work. The first is an assumption about evidence, and the second one is an assumption about rationality. The first assumption is what I'm going to call partitional evidence. So partitional evidence says that the following three constraints are true. First is global factivity. It says that for any word that is doxastically possible, if the agent's future evidence entails the proposition X, then that proposition is true in that word. So you're sure that your evidence will always entail truths. The second constraint is global positive introspection. This is somewhat like the KK principle, the principle that if you know something, you know that you know it. So global positive introspection says that for any doxastically possible word, if the agent's future evidence entails a certain proposition, her evidence will entail that it entails that proposition. So the idea here is that your evidence gives you positive access to your evidence, in the sense that if your evidence includes or entails a certain proposition, your evidence will tell you that it entails it. The third constraint is global negative introspection. It says that for any doxastically possible word, if your future evidence does not entail a proposition X, then your future evidence will tell you that it does not entail that proposition X. So this is like the negative introspection principle for knowledge, which says that if you don't know something that you know, then you know that you don't know it, which is completely plausible when it comes to knowledge. So second assumption is, as I said, is an assumption. So one thing to say before I move on is that these three conditions together, partitional evidence, is called partitional evidence because it means that your future evidence propositions form a partition over the space of your existing possibilities. That is why it is called partitional evidence. Informally, what partitional evidence says is that you're sure that your evidence only will entail truths, and you're also sure that you will have perfect access to what your evidence entails. So the second assumption is exploitability. It's a principle about rationality. So it roughly says that it is rationally permissible for an agent to adopt an updating plan only if that plan isn't subject to a diachronic Dutch book argument with an important proviso. Namely that the Dutch book argument in question has to be one that is offered by a bookie who does not have an unfair epistemic advantage over the agent. So the way we can sort of cash this out within this framework is that the bookie should have the same priors as the agent that we are talking about. And the bookie should have the same future evidence as the agent in every word. So they should not have more accurate priors or more information about the world. Okay. So finally, the final piece of the picture about from these two assumptions is that we have to impose two conditions about dating books. So the first condition is transparency. So call an updating plan transparent just in case. It only recommends probability functions that make you certain about what your evidence is. So it gives you perfect access to what your evidence actually is. And the second condition is reflectiveness. This is slightly more complicated. The idea is that a plan is reflective just in case. Your prior credence in any proposition is a weighted average of your planned future credences in that proposition, where the weights are probability. So here's a natural way of saying what's going on, like abstracting away from the details. So the idea is that suppose my prior credence in a proposition is 0.5, as it is in this case. Now, I am certain, let's say, that my future credence, according to a plan, will be 0.6 in that proposition, no matter what happens. That kind of a plan won't be a reflective plan because 0.5 cannot be expressed as a weighted average of 0.6 when the weights are probabilities. What reflectiveness actually rules out is a certain way of inquiring into the world. It prevents you from biasing your inquiry or setting up an inquiry that is guaranteed to be biased in favor of any proposition. So it's an anti-bias constraint in that sense. Okay, so we can now state the argument. You can actually prove these things formally. I'm just going to say what the facts are. So the first fact is that if partitional evidence is true, then all and only conditionalizing plans are transparent and reflective. They're both like, they give you perfect access to your evidence and they prevent biased inquiry. And fact two is that all and only transparent and reflective plans are immune from diachronic assumptions that we have defined them. And the kinds of diachronic Dutch books that are only offered by bookies who have the same priors and the same evidence as the agent does. So if combining these two facts, we get the result that if partitional evidence is true, then all and only conditionalizing plans are immune from diachronic Dutch books. Partitional evidence was one of our assumptions, so all and only conditionalizing plans are immune from diachronic Dutch books. By exploitability, this means that only conditionalizing plans are ones that we are rationally permitted to adopt. The problem with this argument is that if you reject partitional evidence, the argument fails. And many people have noticed this. Even though there is no general characterization of the conditions under which partitional evidence should fail, or the way they should, like the kinds of ways in which partitional evidence could fail and could create problems for that problem that book for conditionalization. So I'm going to actually fill in that gap. I'm going to show that there is a quite an attractive view about evidence that will create trouble for the this dichotomic Dutch book argument for conditionalization. So let's move on to the main argument. So the view that I'm going to talk about is evidence experiment. It's the view that your proposition, your evidence, can entail truths about, can entail propositions about the non-trivial propositions about the external world. It's a combination of two claims. The first claim is that your evidence can entail propositions, which you could reject if you have a view of evidence on which your evidence does not entail propositions. Maybe it's just a set of probability. It's a probability distribution over the partition. And the second claim is that your some of those propositions that your evidence entails are non-trivial propositions about the external world. For instance, if you have a view on which your evidence only entails propositions about your phenomenal states or what the phenomenal character of your experiences are, those propositions will likely not entail any non-trivial propositions about the external world. So we are ruling out Cartesian pictures of evidence of that kind. Now, an evidence externalist, my claim is, they should reject partitional evidence. Why? This is because most of our information gathering mechanisms, the information gathering mechanisms by which we gather information about the external world, are mechanisms which are fallible. So sometimes they give you false information without giving you a clue that that indeed has happened. So here's a case. I'm looking at a wall which is in fact white but lit up with trick red lighting. So I'm undergoing an experience as of there being a red wall before me. In this case, my experience gives me false information, or at least gives me misleading information about the external world. I have no proof that this has happened. I can't rule out the possibility that I'm actually seeing that the wall is red. Now, in these cases, interestingly, if you assume that your evidence only entails truths, you'll have to reject a certain principle about evidence, namely negative introspection, which says that if your evidence does not entail a certain proposition, then your evidence entails that it does not entail that proposition. Why? So assume that your evidence only entails truths. So I am undergoing an experience as of there being a red wall before me. So because my evidence only entails truths, that proposition, the proposition that the wall is red, cannot be a part of my evidence. Yet, at the same time, I can't rule out the possibility that I'm seeing that the wall is red. And if you assume that factive mental states like seeing suffice for that evidence to have the status of evidence, then you should think that you can't rule out the possibility that your evidence entails that the wall is red. So even though your evidence does not entail that the wall is red, it does not entail that the wall is red. So negative introspection fails. I'm going to make this clearer in a minute, so let's talk about this particular example in more detail. Okay. So you can either follow it here or on the handout. So the case is this. Evidence externalism is true, and I know all the relevant epistemological facts. I'm about to enter a room where I'm sure I will face a wall. I have a credence of 0.9 that the wall will be red. Moreover, I'm sure that if the wall is red, I will see that the wall is red. But I cannot rule out and assign a credence of 0.1 to the possibility that the wall will be white, but later after it's light. I'm sure that if that happens, I will undergo a non-veridical experience as of there being a red wall before me. However, I'm certain that I won't be able to rule out the possibility that I'm seeing that the wall is red. So why does partitional evidence fail in this case? Suppose global factivity is true. Then I can be sure that when I face the white wall, my evidence won't entail that the wall is red, because the only information I have received is that the wall is red. And that's false. I'm also sure that when I face the white wall, I won't be able to rule out the possibility that I'm seeing the wall is red. So if you assume that seeing that P is enough for you to have evidence that P, so I may not be able to rule out the possibility that my evidence entails that the wall is red. If that happens, global negative introspection will fail, because I am in a scenario where my evidence does not entail that the wall is red, yet I cannot rule out the possibility that my evidence entails that the wall is red. So evidence externalists, and I think they should countenance cases of this kind, if they do, they will have to reject partitional evidence. So now we have the resources to create a dichronic Dutch book argument against planet conditionalization. I'm going to show you how to do that. So suppose global negative introspection fails in cases like this case. Now you can easily represent what happens in that case in the following way, with this frame. So you again have W, E, R. Now W again contains two walls, R where the wall is red, W where the wall is white but lit up with red light. Now the important thing is this. When the wall is red, you learn that the wall is red. So your evidence entails that the wall is red. But when you are in the white wall scenario, your evidence does not entail that the wall is red. So you can't rule out the R possibility. So your evidence contains both R and W. And your prior credence in R is 0.9. You are quite confident that you will be in the red wall scenario. And your prior credence in W is 0.1. Okay. Now, one thing to note, we can just like walk through and see how a conditionalizing, what happens if you're using a conditionalizing plan. So when you are in the red wall scenario, you will assign credence 1 to the proposition that the wall is red, and credence 0 to the proposition that the wall is white. However, because you gain no new evidence in the white wall scenario, your credence will remain, posterior credence will remain unchanged. So you will assign 0.9 to the proposition that the wall is red and 0.1 to the proposition that the wall is white. Okay. So here's the dichronic Dutch book. And this is useful, I think. It shows you how negative introspection is failing. So in the red wall scenario, if you take the accessibility relation, represent evidence with accessibility relation, the red walls world only sees itself, but the white wall world sees both the red wall world and itself. Okay. Alright. So three books. The first two are quite trivial. They assign the payoff of those two, and it's defined on the proposition that the wall is red and the proposition that the wall is white. And the payoff is 0 for both books. The only difference is with the third book. So I can just tell you what the strategy is. I'm going to exploit the person's ignorance about their own evidence. So that is why the white wall book is slightly different. So GW pays 0 on the proposition that the wall is red and -1 when the wall is white. So G is the book that is offered to you, sold to you at maximum price before you enter the room. GR is the book that is sold to you at maximum price when you have entered the room, and the wall is red. And GW is the book that is sold to you at maximum price when you have entered the room and the wall is white. And the bookie who sells you this book, importantly, must be able to do this, must be able to see the difference between the red wall scenario and the white wall scenario. So you might worry that the bookie might have more information about the world than you do. So let me sort of assuage that worry. The thought is that the bookie uses a different plan than you. You use a conditionalizing plan. The bookie uses, let's call it, a metaconditionalizing plan. The metaconditionalizing plan says that whenever your strongest evidence that you gain is E, you become certain that the strongest evidence that you have gained is E. So the bookie in the red wall scenario learns that her evidence is that the wall is red. And in the white wall scenario, she learns that she is in that kind of a scenario where her evidence does not entail that the wall is red, but she can't rule out the possibility that the wall is red. So she just learns that she is in the white wall scenario. So she is able to distinguish. So the idea is that on the same basis of the same evidence that you have, the bookie is able to get some other information because she uses a different plan. And that is how the bookie is able to exploit you. Okay, so let's see how this poses, like how these three books together constitute a diachronic Dutch book. So, because the payoff for G and GR is zero everywhere, the profit that you can make from them is also zero. This is just quite trivial because the payoff is zero and the expected payoff is also zero. Subtract one from the other, you get zero. But the profit for GW is negative because the payoff in the wall in the world where the wall is white is minus one, and the expected payoff is minus 0.9, and so you subtract that from minus 1, you get minus 0.1. So that's negative. So the claim is that you are subject to a diachronic Dutch book of the kind that indicates the irrationality of your updating plan according to exploitability. Good, yeah, I have about five minutes left. So the idea is that if exploitability is true, then this kind of a plan should indicate the irrationality of the updating plan, because the bookie, even though he uses a different plan than you, has the same priors and the same evidence as you do, and you are dynamically exploitable in this case. So I would ask you to remember this, that there's this trick of the bookie using a different plan than you here. So if you have a question about that, ask me. So that was what happens in cases of global negative introspection failures. Now suppose you are an externalist, but you don't like that. You don't like global factivity. So what you do is you allow global factivity to fail, but you hold global negative introspection fixed. That's the other possibility. Now things are much, much worse if you reject factivity. So let's think about it. A simple way of representing the same case. Oh, so one, I skipped over something important. I should say it, so let me go back. So the idea is that in this case, you're subject to a diachronic Dutch book because the conditionalizing plan is not transparent. In the world where the wall is white, you don't have perfect access to your own evidence. So because you're respecting your evidence, you don't have perfect access. The plan does not give you a perfect access to your own evidence. So that is why. So you can prove a general result that for any frame where negative introspection fails, conditionalizing plans will be non-transparent. That's kind of trivial, actually. Okay. So suppose global factivity fails.
So the simplest way of representing this again will be with a frame like this. The idea is that in the red wall scenario, you gain evidence that the wall is red, and in the white wall scenario, you can actually gain evidence that the wall is also red. So in both worlds, you have the same evidence. So on this picture, your evidence can entail some falsehoods. So here's a kind of a view about evidence that would do it. Suppose you say that if it seems to you that P, then P is part of your evidence. So in both worlds, it seems to you that the wall is red. So the proposition that the wall is red becomes part of your evidence. So in this case, again, so what happens if you conditionalize? You become certain that the wall is red in both worlds, because your evidence is that the wall is red.
Okay. So now we construct a diachronic Dutch book again. So two books. The first is G old and G new. The stake of G old on the proposition that the proposition that the wall is red is zero, and on the its stake on the proposition that the wall is white is one. And G new is exactly the opposite. It's zero on R on the proposition that the wall is red, but minus one on the proposition that the wall is white. So one way of thinking about it is that not really think of it as a case where two books are being sold to you, but rather a book has been sold to you first, and then the bookie is buying it back from you. That's an alternative way of thinking about it. So G old is the book that is sold to you before you enter the room. And G new is the book that is sold to you after you have entered the room, no matter what your evidence, no matter which world you are in. So it doesn't, we are not varying the books according to your evidence. We're just holding the second book fixed. So we can see how this will constitute a diachronic Dutch book. So the idea is that the G old, the payoff of G old in book is the world where the wall is red is zero, and the expected payoff is actually minus one, is 0.1. So you subtract that from the payoff, you get minus 0.1. The profit of G old in the world where the wall is white is one. And the expected payoff is, again, 0.1. So you subtract that from 1, you get 0.9. Now, after you have entered the room, in both cases, you are certain that you are in the red wall scenario. So in the red wall scenario, the payoff of G new is 0. And the expected payoff is also zero, because you're certain that you are in the red wall scenario. So you subtract zero from zero, you get zero. And in the white wall scenario, the payoff is minus one and the expected payoff is zero, so it's minus one. So you put this and this together, you get that the net profit is minus 0.1. You put this and this together, you get that in the white wall scenario 2, that the net profit is minus 0.1. So you have undergone net loss in both scenarios. So interestingly, here's a diagnosis. In this case, the conditionalizing plan is transparent, because it makes you sure of what your evidence is in both worlds. But it is not reflective. Why? Because you're guaranteed to increase your credence in the red wall proposition no matter what happens. You are able to bias your inquiry in this scenario. So this is a general result that you can prove. So if you have a frame which does not allow for global negative introspection to fail, but allows global factivity to fail, then your conditionalizing plans will be
non-reflective. Okay, I won't talk about the layer. So let's take stock. So if you accept exploitability, then you have to reject either planned conditionalization or evidence externalism. This is because if you're an externalist and you like planned conditionalization, you can't be appealing to diachronic Dutch books to justify planned conditionalization, because conditionalizing plans will be subject to diachronic Dutch books on an externalist view. So I have shown that an evidence externalist who likes planned conditionalization should reject exploitability, the principle underlying diachronic Dutch books. Yeah, I'll stop there.